I'm here in East London, outside the house of artist and curator Sue Kreitzman. You can see from the front of the house the fabulous and vibrant nature of the art that Sue creates. Let's go inside and meet Sue and enter her world where beige is banished. Hi, Sue.
Hello, welcome.
Can we come in and see some of your art?
Please come in.
Thank you for inviting us into your wonderful, colourful studio, Sue. But you weren't always an artist.
No, it's an interesting story. I always loved art. Absolutely adored it from the time I was a child. But I knew that I was very, very bad at it. You know, in primary school, you have to take art. I shattered my crayons. I muttered my watercolors. They told me I couldn't draw. Nothing looked like it was supposed to look. Okay, I'm not an artist. I love art. I love color. Something happened to me. You know, I was in another career entirely. I taught school for a while. And then for many, many years, for decades, I was a food writer. Cooked on television, traveled around the world, teaching cookery, wrote 27 cookbooks. And one day, about maybe 15 or 18 years ago, I was correcting the proofs of my 27th cookbook. And I was sitting up in my desk, and I had, you know, when you're doing this kind of work, I had highlighter pens, and I had Sharpies and all this sort of thing. My hand picked up a colored marker and drew a mermaid. And it was a kind of a folk art mermaid. And she was holding a snake and she had a fish for a hat. And I looked at it and I thought, this is incredible. Where did that come from? And it was like the mermaid was in charge. I was not in charge. And from that moment, I was obsessed with drawing. And I realized it doesn't have to look like something. It looks like what you want it to look like. It comes from inside your head. It comes really from your guts. I became obsessed with drawing, drawing, drawing all the time. I never wrote another cookbook. My agent thought I had completely lost my mind. I probably did. And it was just about the time of the menopause, so either I had a psychotic break or it was the menopause that did this to me. And as I was drawing, 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 I sort of kept it a secret. Only my family knew about it, and my agent thought I was crazy. My family thought, well, they probably thought I was a little bit crazy because they never saw me do that before. They were incredibly nice about it, I have to say. And they admired the drawings. Then I started painting, coloring them in with nail varnish because I have a wonderful street market nearby. They sell these wonderful, cheap, vivid nail polish colors. And it grew from there. And I'm now, this is 18 years later, I'm in my 70s, I'm a famous artist now. I used to be a famous cookbook writer. How did this happen? It happened organically. It was the biggest gift from the universe. I still can't explain it. I don't want to think about it too hard because it might stop. I don't want it to stop. But that's the story of how I became an artist.
Looking around your studio, your work is incredibly vibrant and bold. Where do you find your inspiration and your influences?
I love color. I've always loved color since I was a kid. I never outgrew it. I grew up in a very ordinary house. I guess it was sort of beige. I don't like beige. My mantra is don't wear beige. It might kill you. But when I moved into my first apartment in New York City in 1962, I painted the walls red. I sort of released all my desires. I painted the walls red and yellow and everything was colorful. And my mother came to lunch and she looked around and she sniffed and she said, you'll outgrow it. And that was, what, 54 years ago or something like that. I haven't outgrown it yet. So I do love color. And I am very, very inspired by the art of Mexico, the art of Haiti, all tribal art, religious iconography, although I'm not a particularly religious person. I adore the iconography of various religions. And I find that very exciting. I'm also inspired by graffiti and street art. And inspiration is everywhere. Outsider art. I am an outsider artist of sorts because I work completely outside of the mainstream of the art world, and so far from the margins that I can't even see the margins. I am very inspired by children's art. And sometimes people come to me because they say, you know, you have this amazing second career. I want to do that. How do I do that? I'm going to go take lessons. And I said, the worst thing you can do is take lessons. The thing to do is sit down and think. Go back in your mind to the time when you were a child and you were drawing with no thought of what anybody judging you, with no thought of anything except you wanted to draw a house, a tree, your mom, your dog. go back to that point and draw like that and see where it develops. And that, to me, that's real art, not going and having lessons and learning about perspective and this and that. That's great stuff, but not, to me, the real art is that which comes out of your memory, comes out of your guts. So do that. I guess that's what I'm doing. The child that I suppose is still in there started drawing. And yet they were quite grown-up pictures, but still very childish at the same time. You can go to my website, and there are lots of my pictures. And I also now do sculptures. And I glue things onto other things. I'm a great fan of found objects. You know, we're surrounded by the detritus of past lives. There's so much junk out there. A lot of it is free. You can pick it up on the street. The kids in the neighborhood give me their old toys. Go look in your old jewelry boxes for broken jewelry. I glue all that stuff onto my paintings, onto my sculptures. It's like mining for gold. So, yes, anybody, and I mean anybody, can be an artist. If I'm an artist, you can do it too.
Now we're really getting into the world of Sue Kreitzman. This is her studio. We're coming in and, wow.
So this is my shed in the backyard. It's a double shed because I have a double back garden. And this is where I work. So I have a thing in progress here right now. I'm a great collector of found objects. These are actually ancient wooden bowling pins that are shaped like shapely women's bodies. Yeah. That was one of the finds of my life. Absolutely unbelievable. It's going to be a whole series of goddesses. You can see that. It's just absolutely wild.
And
everything is found objects, old jewelry, little bits of this and little bit of that. I'm really excited about this. There are three more, but they're on the kitchen table in the actual flat because they're pretty much done. These are still under construction. And you can see all my materials, my wonderful helper, Hannah, she files everything. So if I need an eyeball in a hurry, I just go to the box that's marked eyeballs. If I need a tusk, if I need an alien, I even have one that says aliens inside. I have a box full of teeth. Whatever I need, I go to the box and there it is. So this is, I'm very, very lucky. This is my shed. This is like the inside of my head in here.
It's incredible. So much here, and you're putting them together into your creations.
It's heaven in here. This is what I do. I paint and I do paintings as well, but these are the sculptures. They are assemblages, and they're made out of just stuff. When they're finished, they're going to be really, wow, va-va-voom, absolutely amazing. Very, very happy with this project.
Your studio is here in East London. What drew you to this area when you first came over to the UK?
We first came to the UK because my husband was offered a position as a research associate 30 years ago at Cambridge University. And it was the kind of offer we couldn't say no to. At the time, he was a tenured professor at Emory University in Atlanta. Didn't know where we would go next, but this fell in our lap. And we thought, okay, we'll try it for 2 years. Because it's a very big move. Our son was 11 at the time, and that was 30 years ago. So, you know, the UK has been very good to us, and we like it here. But we were living in a very small fen village, 12 miles outside of Cambridgeshire. It was a terrible, terrible fit for me. My hubby was okay because he was at the university, and he lives in his head anyway. He's a scientist. I was very, you know, I'm a strange, colorful New York crazy woman. They didn't know what to make of me. I became a slight semi-demi-hemi celebrity during those years because I was cooking on the BBC all the time. I had a regular spot. I did that for years. So they would ask me to open fates and to do this and to do that. I always did it with a big smile. But they only saw me as a personage. They didn't really get me. And to tell you the truth, I didn't get them either. So I was looking for a place in London because my agent was here, my publisher was here. I was in the food business then. Everything was here in London. And we looked and we looked and we looked and finally came to the East End to look because things are expensive. Even back then, things were expensive. And I got off the tube and I walked up to the corner of the street where I live now. It's the real old East End. And a lot of East End is getting very hip right now. This is still the old East End. And I was walking and I had the strangest feeling that I had come home. There was something about it. I immediately felt at home. So I rented a place for a few years. It was a very quirky place. It would take me an hour to tell you about that place. That was an adventure. Until I found this ex-council maisonette that I was able to buy. And that was almost 20 years ago. I've been really, really happy here. I love my neighbors. I love the neighborhood. Gentrification and the hipness is slowly creeping up on us, but it hasn't quite reached us yet. But it is still very much the old East End, and I like it a lot. A lot of diversity here. I love it.
And now we're going through Sue's house, just amazed at the color, just hits you in the eyes. Now, Sue, what do we have here?
These three figures, you just saw the ones in progress in the studio, the shed studio. These are three that are just about done. I might do a little something to them, but they're pretty much done. So once they're done, they come into the big house, i.e. my flat. They're all going to be part of one big installation. They will never be shown on their own. So they're essentially goddesses. I have this thing I imagine about the afterlife. I don't know if there is an afterlife or not, but it's so much fun to fantasize about what might happen after you're gone. Maybe you're not really gone. Maybe you go on to something else. So I have all the dolls and the old battered doll's heads and doll's parts that I use. They're no good anymore. They're cracked. They're old. They're just completely on the trash heap. So I give them a makeover. I give them a life that they never imagined they could have when they were in their old, boring dollhood. I have some more over here. You can see them sitting. And they're all waiting. They're in the waiting room to the afterlife. And they're waiting for the call. Here's the telephone. That's the hotline to the afterlife. And they want to be chosen either to be in the heroine department or the goddess department. And they've dressed themselves up because they don't know exactly what they're supposed to wear to be either of those things. So when they're called for the interview, they say, look at me. I look like a goddess. I look like a superhero. Choose me. Choose me. And they have this little television that they can watch while they're waiting. It actually has moving pictures and music and everything. So they watch television, they listen to the music, and they're waiting for the phone call. They're in the waiting room. I take old junk that nobody wants anymore, especially old mannequins and dolls, and I completely reinvent them, and they are extremely over the top. They're fantastic. They're either going to be goddesses or superheroes or something glittering and fantastic that they never dreamt they could be. It's a metaphor, really, for old age, because you go into menopause, and it's the same as when you go from childhood into puberty. You become a completely different person. And when you go through menopause, completely different person. And that's a good thing. That person is incredibly exciting. Something fabulous is always going to happen to you.
Now, if you could see this phone, this is an incredibly blinged up phone, so it is a wonderful phone. And on the wall, we have a portrait, and I think this is you.
Yes, I have a wonderful friend named Ella Guru. She is not an outsider artist. She's actually trained. She went to art school and everything. She's quite well known. She's fantastic. And she has painted my portrait three times. It's an honor. She asked me if she could paint my portrait. So there's one on one side of the living room. There's one over here. And another a private collector bought, and it's hanging in some stranger's place. But each one is different. And this is me sitting there with, this is my life. This is not, we didn't pose for this. She just spent the day. And this is what we were doing. I'm talking on the goddess phone. I think it's, you know, it's a direct line to the goddess department. And Anne-Sophie Cochelevue, who dresses like this every day. And she came on her bicycle. And we're playing with Barbies. We're just having a fabulous day. And Ella was here to record it. And she did this amazing painting. I'm very privileged. I lead a privileged life because of the people I know. I know the most creative, colorful, and wonderful people. So Anne-Sophie is young. She's in her 20s. Ella, who did the portrait, is in her 40s. So my friends and my artists are all across, you know, up to my friend Malka Zeldis and a couple of other friends who are well into their 80s. We're all really, really colorful. We're very creative. We live, you know, art is what makes life fantastic.
I've been admiring your closet as well as the art here in your studio. Some of your outfits are just incredibly stunning and unique. Do you feel that that's an extension of your work?
It is very much so. I mean, part of what I do is not only make my own art, but I am a great champion of other outsider artists, young artists, also old artists, who are doing fabulous work. And I collect a lot of their work, and I curate shows that show off their work, and I do everything I can to support them. I won't say I'm anti-fashion. I'm just not interested in fashion per se. Every single thing I wear, I wear plain black dresses, and those I just buy online because they make the colors pop of everything else. But all the other things I wear, my jewelry, my kimonos, my jackets, are made by somebody I know and somebody whose work I think is fantastic. So Lauren Shanley, who works out of Oxo Tower, makes some of my clothes. Diane Goldie, amazing woman. She hand paints onto clothing. She hand paints my images, also the images of other artists I admire, onto clothing. I make a lot of my own jewelry. And Anne Sophie Kosholevu, Amanda Keynes, Tati Devine, they've done things for me. Wonderful friend in New York named Anna Ty Hansen. Often they will use my materials, which I will give them, and they make gorgeous necklaces for me. So the point is, I collect art of my friends and the people I admire. And when I go outside and enter the real world outside, I can't bear to leave the art behind me. So I wrap myself in it. And I'm either wearing my own art or my friend's art, and I am a walking collage. And I love that. I love bringing art onto the streets. So it's almost as if I'm a walking graffiti exhibition, because I am very colorful. I am covered, wrapped, enveloped in art. And I like to talk about it, too. So when people stop me, I have to say, so-and-so made this one, and Diane made that one, and I made this, and here's the story. When I get dressed in the morning, it's not so much that I get dressed. I curate myself every single morning.
And you're also a curator putting together other outsider artists in blockbuster shows. How do you work together with other artists? And are there any new shows that you're planning recently?
I've done several shows. The first one I did was called Wow, Wild Old Women. And we were only old women. I've changed since then. Now I have old men, young women, people of every sexuality, every size, every shape, every background. I was in a show called Raw Art Show in London. It was a really interesting show. It had about 70 artists, and I was nervous about it. I submitted my work. This was years and years ago, and I thought, they're just going to laugh at me. And they didn't. They accepted me into the show. Then I was really nervous. I said, I'm going to be the oldest woman in there. And I was in my 60s at the time. Are there even going to be any other women? There were a handful of old women, not quite my age. And I use that word old, you know, we're not real. It's a matter of years. It's not a matter of attitude. But there were several women who were almost my age. And we formed a little clique. We had lunch together, we went out to dinner, we just talk, and we were having this wonderful meal in Chinatown one evening while the show was on, and I said, you know, we should have our own show. We could call it Wild Old Women. Wow. And you know what? I did it. Several years later, I got the funding. I did it, and it turned out to be such a blockbuster. We got rave reviews. We had wonderful crowds, and that was the beginning. I'm still proud of that show. We had a fabulous catalog. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. So then a couple of years later, I did one called Flashier and Trashier. That's when we let old men in. And then 2 years later, I did Dare to Wear. For Dare to Wear, I didn't care. As long as I loved their work and their work fit into this wild, you know, outsider artist thing. So we had young people, old people, men, women. Oh, God, that was a good show. And then just last year, I did something called Epiphanies, which was completely outsider art. And again, everybody welcome, as long as I had room for them and they were true outsiders. It's that passion that I want, that passion and that lack of training. It's the, you know, the interior training. And I'd like to, in 2015, have a 5-year anniversary of Wow, Wild Old Women. Plus now, as I say, suddenly I'm really well known. My work is in a museum in Oxford, and it's going to be in a museum in Monmouth, New Jersey, a big outsider art show later this summer. And I'm doing a big installation in a color show called The Color of Dreams, because after all, color is my thing, at St. Pancras Conference Center and St. Pancras Hospital this autumn. So there are always things going on. I'll never stop.
You were also involved in a recent Channel 4 programme called Fabulous Fashionistas. How did you become involved with that?
That was an adventure, and it continues being an adventure. Sue Bourne is the filmmaker, the director, and the producer, a really, really talented woman. So she was looking to make a documentary. At that point, she didn't know it was going to be a full-length film or on TV or what it was. So she found me through the Advanced Style Blogspot, a young man named Ari Seth Cohen, who spends his life roaming the streets of various cities snapping, fabulous old ladies. And he's looking for style. Some of the times the ladies are very tailored. Sometimes they're really crazy. Sometimes, you know, just every kind of interesting older woman. And she saw me on the blog, and that's how she found me. We've become friends. She's an amazing woman. I have a huge amount of respect for her. She always says to me, the film is really not about fashion. She used that as a device to talk about getting old in an interesting way. She used it as a device to be able to show women who are getting old with attitude. As she says, she uses this term, squeezing the pips out of life. So we're six women, all very, very different, ranging from the 70s well up into the 80s. We all have an incredible zest for life, and we love clothes, and each of us has a completely different style, which is what made the movie so powerful. And each woman talks very candidly about life and death and health and all those other things. It is such an inspiring film. We trended number one on the night it showed. Everybody was talking about it. Twitter was going mad all about us. It was great. We were, you know, sort of instant celebrities. And it was on YouTube. It's not legal for it to be on YouTube. But every time it goes up on YouTube, it goes viral. Millions of people watch that film. Then it's taken down for copyright reasons. It's been such an adventure. It's very, very, very satisfying because we have a message. And the message is about growing old and not giving in, not retiring, you know. So I love this message. And I love the fact that everywhere I go all over the world, people come running up to me and they say, I saw you in that film. They get overwhelmed, they get emotional, and they all say the same thing. They say, you were my favorite. But I know for a fact that whatever of the ladies they run into, they say the same. You were my favorite. So I love that. I love that sort of thing. It's just fantastic.
I love the philosophy of independent creativity around what you do. Would you say that having such a strong passion in life keeps you young at heart?
I couldn't agree more. In my case, I sort of retired, although I didn't have retirement in mind. I always said that I would keep writing cookbooks until I dropped dead at the stove. But something, you know, the muse bit me in the bum. Or I was hit by a metaphorical bolt of lightning and I started painting and drawing and making sculptures instead of writing cookbooks. So that's not retirement per se. I think retirement is a big mistake. Just keep going. You have to have something you deeply care about. You have to have a passion in life. You have to have a real reason for getting up in the morning. And when the rheumatiz gets you and your knees don't feel so good and you just feel something that might, dare I mention it, feel like old age is creeping in, you ignore it. You keep going as long as you can. I mean, real health problems are problems. I can't pretend they're not. But just keep going. Just keep going. You have a reason to get up in the morning. Every day is an adventure. I never know exactly what I'm going to be making. I don't know who I'm going to be seeing. I have this wonderful cadre of artists all around me now. And a good thing, too, is as you get older and as you move into other things, you want to be doing things for others, not only yourself. The fact that I curate shows for artists in many cases would not have a place to show. That I can support and push young artists. I can find a place for old artists. I can't tell you how satisfying it is. One of my friends, Julia Cici, who's an amazing artist who lives in France right now, and she said, Sue, a whole art movement is forming around you. And, you know, that's kind of true. And it makes me very, very proud. So, A, have something you're passionate about. Have a reason to get up in the morning. It should make a difference, not only to you, but to other people as well. That's what life is all about. We live in a tough, tough, unfortunately terrible world. And all you can do is make your little part of the world a better place. If you can do that, you're a very, very lucky person.
Thank you so much, Sue. It's been a complete privilege.
Thank you. It's been quite delightful. You're welcome here anytime, my dears.